You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this episode is Josie McAllister. Josie, it's good to have you here.
Thank you so much, Eric, for having me. It's a pleasure.
So the show is with a huge question. Who are you? What do we need to know to start this conversation?
I'm a dermatologist in Ithaca, New York. I've been practicing for just over a decade. We care for patients of all ages in the Ithaca and Cortland areas in central New York. And I'm also the mother of two girls who are 8 and 9. The oldest one has complex medical conditions. She has Down syndrome and type 1 diabetes. So going to medical school, I was called to help other people, never realized I'd be able to help my own family in this way as well. And what a wonderful community Ithaca has been to be able to start a practice in, get to know people in my practice and to care for them and to care for the community, and then also to be able to raise my family in.
And along with kind of the lived commitments that are implicit in what you just described, what are some of the values that you aspire to hold or to explore through the way you live?
I just finished reading this lovely book called Living Without Lack by Dallas Willard. It talks about how to live in the fullness of Psalm 23, which is just this beautiful psalm. It talks about how the Lord is your shepherd. He's with you every step of the journey. And I seek to live in his presence every moment of every day. It's often easy to forget in the busyness of life.
True.
I have to give credit to my pastor, Eric, another Eric here in the community, at Bethel Grove Bible Church. He preached a sermon on Psalm 23, and I've been exploring the psalm ever since. And it's really become even more important in this time of pandemic. We're not able to just run out to the store and buy every little thing that we think we need. We've learned to do more with less, and we've found that we don't always need something new to fulfill a need. We can be creative. We can work with the people who are right around us. We can reach out over Zoom and build relationships and do things in new ways. And I think that will make us so much stronger and more resilient and give us richer and more satisfying lives once this pandemic is over as well.
Sure. Now, you brought some music with you. What would you like to start the show with?
So the song Wo Yao Ni Di Ai from Crazy Rich Asians is just a super fun, jazzy song. And it also is fitting when we think about the beginning of my life. My grandmother has always had a big influence on my life. She grew up around Shanghai. And I know she would have listened to this song and just loved it. Basically, it means, I want your love. I want your love and acceptance.
Here we go.
Give me a little tender love, baby, hold me tight.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this episode is Josie McAllister. So Josie, what were some of the experiences that you had to live through to know how to live the life you value now?
I think it was really important for me to have the experience of growing up as an outsider in Lexington, Massachusetts. It's a predominantly white community, especially so when I was growing up in the 1980s. And it was very difficult for the other children to relate to me, to really see me as fully American. I think in a lot of ways, our society still isn't able to see people of color as typical Americans. That's maybe not the image that comes to mind when we think of an American. And yet I saw myself very much as that. And so it was painful for me when people would make fun of my Chinese name, or they would make fun of the dumplings that my mom packed for my lunch. And I remember once getting so upset, I actually threw a temper tantrum, just wanting brown hair and blue eyes like everyone else. It took me a while to really accept myself and accept the unique ways in which God has created me. And I think that it's helpful to have that perspective because everybody wants love and acceptance. And nobody fits into our image of what the ideal person should be. We all have ways in which we feel like an outsider. And so that perspective has been helpful to me as a member of the community, seeking to lift up those who may not have voices that are heard, and also seeking to reach out to my patients and really listen and find the treatment that will work for them and the way to communicate with them that will help them to pursue good health.
So I'm just curious because you have, can you say a little bit more, what happened inside of you that turned the internal judgment to internal acceptance? What did you experience? What happened to make that shift?
It was out of necessity. Growing up, I was such a perfectionist, and not being able to automatically, be accepted among my peers, I found that one way in which I could find acceptance was in academic excellence. So I really pursued that. I may have taken it to slightly unhealthy levels. There's this beautiful Bible verse in Corinthians that talks about doing everything as though you're doing it for God. And, I kind of misinterpreted that as meaning, the work part of life, not necessarily relating to other people or taking the time just to stop and enjoy, the beauty of a snowy morning like what we're enjoying now. And I got to a point where I was crushing myself with my own high expectations. And so I had to reevaluate how to make life sustainable going forward, and had to remind myself of the grounding truth that God loves me, whether I'm able to achieve or whether I'm not, right? Because he loves us regardless. He created us the way that he wants us to be. And this is what I tell my daughter. Elwyn, it's amazing. She's 9 and she has Down syndrome, and she's taught me so much about God's love and acceptance and how his values are not the world's values. And it's just been life-giving,
right,
and
right.
Life-renewing.
So it sounds, as you became kinder and more loving of yourself, you could also see that later on down the road in your with your daughter and experience more of God's love through that process. But
I could see just
change?
What a miracle every human life is, right? Every person who's here, it's taken so much for them just to be able to be here with us every day, and every little thing that we're able to do is a blessing.
I'm going to tell a story. It doesn't line up well with yours, but it gets at one piece of yours that I would like to explore. When my daughter was in fourth grade, one winter quarter, she decided she was going to play basketball. She was going to play piano, flute, be in the school choir, be in the church choir, play indoor soccer. She was going to do all of these things because her appetite was huge. She was a bit of a perfectionist, but she also had tremendous energy. This was a child who only slept for 3.5 hours at a time with a 2-hour break until she was old enough to crawl and put herself and get herself tired. When she was an infant, she just about killed us because she didn't need sleep. Anyway, when she was in fourth grade, she wanted to take all of this on, and we were, her mother and I were somewhat ambivalent about it, but I said, go ahead and try it, but do it for the whole time, and at the end, we will reconsider. And she, at the end of those 3 months, she was just completely exhausted and completely worn out, and she said, I'll never do that again. But she learned by having pushed herself almost beyond her limits by her own choice that she could make a different choice. And it sounds to some extent, that's part of your story. You pushed yourself in part because you wanted acceptance, wanted excellence, but it was your fight. It wasn't anybody else's in the way that you resolved it. Maybe it was fighting their prejudice, but it was the fight that you chose. Am I making sense?
Absolutely. Yeah.
How has that sense of personal power? Because, you know, even though, and I'm speaking to you as a devout Christian and realizing that power is something we don't talk about very openly or very well, but in our relationship with God, we are not simply powerless. We are also beings of kind of immense and sacred power, which we can abuse or we can use well. How did you learn to use your power, which is what I'm hearing you say, in a sense for good rather than for as a machine to manipulate you?
Well, I had a very interesting experience. I taught a Sunday school class on racial reconciliation at Bethel Grove Bible Church, and it was intense and yet a joyful experience. We really got to know each other on a very personal level because issues of race and identity, they're so emotional and they get to the core of who you are. And I remember during this one session, I was just lamenting what has happened to Black Americans in American history. And one of our classmates really took offense to that. And he said, Josie, you're not Black American, you're Chinese American. You don't have to take on those sadnesses. And it was a really good reminder to me that we have free choice, just like you're talking about. You know, we can freely choose from so many of the good things that God has created. And that's the power that we have. And every day, I want to choose to live in God's goodness, to live in His love. And even in the moments that are sad, where we see other people's heartbreak, I want to choose to share in that because there's goodness in that. There's goodness in that empathy, and that's how we really are able to see one another and care for one another and help one another. So this might be a good place to play Goodness of God by Jen Sure. Johnson.
Sure.
Close like no other. I've known you as a father.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this episode is Josie McAllister. So I'm curious, why did you choose to help lead the program on racism at Bethel Grove? And what did you discover about yourself and the congregation that you didn't know before you entered into that process?
Well, growing up as Chinese American, I was always very attuned to injustice and to racial injustice, although not to the same degree as if I were Black American. And there were different times growing up, for example, when I did a research project on the Metco program. There's a busing program in Boston that brings children from Roxbury and Dorchester out to Lexington. To be able to go to school in a place that gives them opportunities to get into high-ranking colleges. And it always struck me that no matter how we tried to bring them into our community, it was difficult to overcome barriers between people who lived here and those who were brought into the community. And over time, there were other challenges that took precedence in my life, particularly all the years I spent in college and then medical school. And our church, a couple of years ago, started a Sunday school that was called Woke Church. And it really kind of woke me up again to these issues. And I found that there was a community of Christians in Ithaca who were so passionate about building bridges across those differences. We talked before about the deep economic divide in a place like Ithaca that you would think is so small and close-knit, and yet these social differences, these cultural differences, these economic differences can become so difficult to bridge. And so through that, I was inspired to and encouraged by my pastor Santosh, who has done a lot of really great teaching at Bethel Grove on the topic of racial reconciliation, to start a Sunday school class based on a book by Latasha Morrison called Be the Bridge. What a beautiful concept. It's something that all of us, regardless of our background, can try to do in our everyday lives. And you know, even in a community as small as Ithaca, there's quite a bit of diversity, as I found in our Sunday school class. There were people of all different ages and educational backgrounds and socioeconomic backgrounds. And when your heart is opened to the sadness and the heartbreak of racial injustice in our country, it opens your eyes to so much suffering and so much need out there. And it just gives me hope that there's still so much good work out there that can be done. So it's just been such a blessing in my life that there is a community of like-minded individuals, both at my church, as well as in my patient population. My patients and I are often chatting in the course of, you know, the work that I do. And what a wonderful community to be in, where people are interested in growing together.
I want to come at a couple of things. A lot of the way in which economic class segregation plays itself out in Tompkins County is that we largely export the working poor. They have to live outside the county because they cannot afford to live in the county. And that creates a whole number of burdens with respect to transportation, with respect to being present in their children's lives when they're in schools that are 30 or 40 miles from their work. Or it's a very different kind of setting. And that's one of the things that we haven't owned here in terms of our impact on the region. Another thing was, when you were telling your story, I was remembering a student that I had in a first year writing seminar who was from outside the Boston area, who was from Hong Kong. His family had left prior to the transition from British rule to Chinese. And they left because they didn't see things going well when that happened. But they moved into a mixed race neighborhood, and he chose not to go this more stereotypic route for him because there was no large Asian population there for him either. But he chose to identify with his African American friends and adopt some of the lifestyle issues and some of the realities that they were coping with, which made him appear so non-typical. It's non-stereotypical that people did not know what to do with him. And he didn't know what to do with his own heart for the people that he loved around him, whose options were constricted, as were his. You know, and so as a student, he was trying to put that into perspective. And I hope that he did. I haven't, you know, you have so many students that we never really follow up. But there are so many ways in which we get thrust into issues of systemic racism, and we navigate our own unique way. How do you see the bridges that you are trying to effect, changing the ways in which people engage one another in the wider community?
Well, there are times when I'm talking to my patients about this issue, and you know, the topic of my Sunday school comes up, and they're just shocked that people in the church care about this, because in their worldview, you know, they see people who are religious in a certain way and as maybe not caring so much about the plight of the underserved. And so that's one way that we can build a bridge, just like you talked about that student, you know, shattering stereotypes, and what a gift that is, you know, when we live in multicultural communities and make those true connections. I also recently became the president of the Tompkins County Medical Society, and that's something that I hope to use to build bridges in our community. I know that healthcare is an area in which there is definitely inequity, and where there's a lot of good work that still needs to be done for us to reach out to our community and see how we can serve them better and be accessible to all who need us.
So one of the ways in which we go with this interview, and I kind of try to keep a similar structure because it allows for me to get to know people and for people to get to know each other in a predictable sort of way. But to stay with your story, how have you had to change during your time here in ways that you wouldn't have anticipated or necessarily even have chosen?
Well, having Ilwin as my daughter has brought a huge change into my life. First of all, becoming a mother. Never anticipated what a huge transition that would be. I realized immediately what a luxury I'd had my entire life to just be able to focus on myself and on my own academic growth and excellence. What a gift that was that my parents gave to me all my life. And suddenly here, I was with a child where the future was very unknown. And in the past, people with Down syndrome have been so marginalized. Their own parents haven't wanted to raise them. When they were given to institutions, no effort was made to educate them or even to potty train them. You know, such a simple skill. Everything takes more time and effort for a child with special needs. And yet it's so much more rewarding when they're able to reach those milestones. So I remember when I had my second daughter 20 months later, and I was just shocked at how quickly all the milestones went by, and I barely saw them. And with Ilwin, we just were so surrounded. I think this is one of the reasons that God brought us to Ithaca, actually. So initially we came because my husband was recruited to Cornell to be a theoretical physics professor in their incredible physics department. And we are so thankful for that. And once I had Ilwin, I realized that there was a community here that just loves children with special needs. And the resources here through RACR, through people at my church who have a heart for children with special needs, the way that the community has, you know, just loved Ilwin. She goes to a normal class, Elizabeth Ann Clune Montessori School of Ithaca. And we just feel so blessed every day to be able to raise her in a place that accepts her and provides her with so many services that are helpful to her to be able to grow her potential. And it's exciting for me to be able to see all the things that she's able to do. She can read. She started reading at the age of 2. And in Sunday school, she would be the center of attention because most of the other children her age at that time weren't reading. And these were typically abled children. And so she would sit there with a book and she would read to them. And I have to thank my mom for that. She is actually a specialist in early childhood education. And when she first came to this country, you know, she didn't quite fit the mold in Taiwan and in Chinese society. And so coming out here, she was able to pursue her passion in teaching. And it just so happens that she had the perfect skill set to someday help me with Ilwin. So even though my parents still have a home in Lexington, Massachusetts, and my father primarily lives there, and my sister and her family live here with him, we're actually here in Lexington right now over Christmas break. But my mom's been able to come and live with us during the week so that Ilwin is cared for. She receives the support that she needs. She also has type 1 diabetes. And that means that her blood sugar needs to be monitored around the clock. My husband hasn't slept through the night since Ilwin's diagnosis at the age of 2. It's very dangerous if a child's blood sugar goes down below a certain level when they're sleeping. So her monitor will alarm throughout the night. Okay. And somehow he's still able to get up in the morning and function and do his theoretical physics research and teaching. And God has given us the strength to be able to do this. I talked earlier about Psalm 23 and what a reassurance it is that in every moment, God is with us. And I've just learned through this experience how dependent we are on him. And how if we ask him for strength and help and patience, he's right there with us and he provides everything that we need.
And I want to go back to particularly one line in that psalm before we get too far along. But what I want to notice about Ilwin and your attitude towards her is that she whatever her baseline start was, she's capable of learning and engaging and doing things. And the more we do for people what they can do for themselves, the more we disable them. And it happens whether we're fully abled adults or not. When we get in the way of having other people do what they can do for themselves so that we only do what they cannot do, that's the covenant relationship. That's the core of the covenant relationship. And my guess is that this, not only if you've learned this powerfully with your daughter, but my guess is it also affects the way in which you, in a sense, and it's, you almost have a coaching role, I imagine, with your patients.
That's right. A lot of it is just about encouragement, encouraging them that they can do it, that they can wear that sunscreen every day, that they can reapply that sunscreen every hour when they're out swimming or sweating. And, you know, if we only see them about once a year or twice a year, and, you know, it's sometimes that's all they need to be able to take on a new lifestyle skill to help themselves.
It's encouragement, but it's also knowledge. Knowledge that they can take in, seeing what the consequences are and what the actual treatments are and things. It helps people to make a choice in the way that you made a choice when you decided to be less perfectionistic.
Yeah, how much freedom that gave me, though. You know, how much energy we spend trying to control every little thing. And really, there are so many things that are completely out of our control. But what we can control is our attitude and our response. And there's a silver lining in everything. And I was talking before about how we only see our patients, you know, one or two times a year. Right. And yet we're able to get, build some meaningful connections during those times. And a recurring theme of this year is just all the silver linings. You know, there's so much that my patients and I are thankful for. The time that we've had with family, the way in which our eyes have been opened to all the little blessings that that we have to be able to help us to make it through this time. Instacart delivery, internet, Zoom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If you look at every little thing that we have in our life, you know, where it's overwhelming.
Let's cut to music and then we'll come back to the 23rd Psalm. What should we play next?
Let's take a look here.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Clay Report. Our guest on this episode is Josie McAllister. What are you looking at there?
So thank you for the music I chose, because that's how I feel every day, being able to practice dermatology in Ithaca. Patients will come in and they'll thank me for taking care of them. They'll thank me for finding a skin cancer and saving their life with an early diagnosis of melanoma. And I want to say thank you. Thank you for giving me an opportunity to help you and to have a purpose in my life and to build these connections and relationships. You know, even in a place as small as Ithaca, there is so much. And these connections that we build every day are so life-giving and such a privilege.
I'm nothing special. In fact, I'm a bit of a bore. When I tell a joke, you've probably heard it before. But I have a talent, a wonderful thing. 'Cause everyone listens when I start to sing. I'm so grateful and proud. All I want is to sing it out loud. So I say thank you for the music, the songs I'm singing. Thanks for all the joy they're bringing. Who can live without it? I ask in all honesty. What would life be without a song or a dance? What are we? So I say thank you for the music, for giving it to me. Mother says I was a dancer before I could walk. She says I began to sing long before I could talk. often wonder, how did it all start? Who found out that nothing could capture a heart like a melody can? Well, whoever it was, I'm a fan, so I say thank you for the music, the songs I'm singing. Thanks for all the joy they're bringing. Who can live without it? I ask in all honesty, what would life be without a song or a dance? What are we? So I say thank you for the music, for giving it to me. So lucky, I am the girl with golden hair. I want to sing it out to everybody. What a joy, what a life, what a chance. Thank you for the music, the songs I'm singing. Thanks for all the joy they're bringing. Who can without it, I ask in all honesty, what would life be without a song or a dance? What are we? So I say thank you for the music, for giving it to me. So I say thank you for the music, for giving it to me.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and this is the Made of Play Report. Our guest on this episode is Josie McAllister. So, Josie, you've referred to the 23rd Psalm a couple of times, and I've promised that we were going to get around to it. One of the things, particularly in a pandemic, is the line, yea, and I'm going to cite it in the version that I grew up as a kid reading and speaking. Yea, though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil. The valley of the shadow of death is not death. It's the fear of death. And in a pandemic, it's not so much the death that's abounding around us. It's our fear of death and inability, in a certain sense, to get a grip with each other, to understand that we're taking risks. We don't control completely whether we live or die, though we can improve the chances. And it's that lightness that's missing. How, as a physician and a scientist and a person of faith, do you balance that notion that there are things we can do, but we don't control? How do you convey how does that attitude affect your practice?
Well, this year has been so frustrating for medical professionals and very, very discouraging. So not only are we seeing our colleagues struggle on the front lines without adequate personal protective equipment, we also see people protesting excellent medical advice. They don't want to wear masks. They don't want to stay socially distanced. I just had to get out of the house yesterday. And so I drove to an adjacent town, and I was shocked to see how many people were swarming the parking lot of our local mall. It was like there wasn't a pandemic going on at all. One thing Dallas Willard talks about in his book, Life Without Lack, is that, it's human nature to take a good thing and then kind of take too much of it and it becomes a bad thing. In America, we have this concept of liberty. What a beautiful concept, the freedom to thrive and freely choose whom you want to associate with, whom you feel called to help, the ways in which you want to benefit other people in your life. When you take this to the extreme of liberty is doing whatever I want to do, whenever I want to do it, that's the opposite of what we really should be doing as human beings who learn and grow and hopefully follow sound scientific advice. And So that's been a real challenge in this time. And what I've had to learn through this experience is that we cannot force anyone to do anything. People choose to do what they want to do. And so as a physician, I can share my advice and I can give recommendations and I can give encouragement. Mm-hmm. The rest is up to the patient. And that frees me. That frees me from responsibility for the choices that they make. And that allows me to be able to keep caring for the next patient and the next patient and the next patient. And at some point, this patient who may have made a decision that's not in the best interest of their health, they may realize that they made the wrong decision and come back. And I'm here to help them instead of burning out, instead of getting discouraged, instead of just giving up.
So whenever I see defiant behavior in either a child or an adult, I can almost bet you dollars to donuts that they have been manipulated and controlled by somebody who took away their choices. It doesn't begin with defiance. Defiance is a symptom that the system was messed up a long time ago. And telling people what to do, even if it's technically sound, does not even begin to undo the damage that was done by people being ordered around in jobs or families or abusive relationships that make them defiant.
Yes, and I think that our response, our reactionary response, can also make it worse and make people more dug in. So for
Absolutely.
Example, the people that ran up to the state capitals and wanted to open everything, let's have a conversation. Let's sit down one-on-one. What is it that you really want to do that you feel that we're telling you can't do right now? Let's find a solution. Are you just saying that you want a job? You know, do you need to go out because you need to make a living for your family? Let's find a safe way to do that.
Or do you want a measure of freedom that you feel like you've never had the luxury of having? And this way you can take it in defiance. It's a secondary gain, but for some people it's a gain in terms of psychological explanations. What you said was that you give people information and you're not responsible for their decisions. And that makes it, that's a boundary, and that allows them to use what you have to offer. My biggest issue with Dr. Fauci, and a lot of people don't agree with me, is he gave people advice rather than just facts. When you start giving advice, you provoke people's resentment because you begin to resemble everybody else who's ever told them what to do. But if you give people really good facts, and like how facts about what it would be like to be in a multi-generational household in small quarters and still be relatively protected from COVID, which he didn't do, which the healthcare profession largely hasn't done because of institutional racism, we don't have people giving us the facts that we find useful. And that's on our system. That's on Fauci. That's on everybody in charge and everybody who is complaining about people not following advice, but they haven't been given facts that are useful to them.
Yes. And as frustrating as the last 4 years have been, I also see a silver lining in that there's so much that we can learn from this time, isn't there?
Yep. And what are you alluding to? What do you see as some of the learnings that are around the corner for us if we should choose to take them?
Well, just like you mentioned, you know, with Dr. Fauci and, you know, how to impart information, that people are willing to accept. But just in general, looking at how divided our society is and trying to figure out, is our current approach the one that will bring us together and unify us and make us stronger? Or is there something that we need to change about the way that we're communicating with one another, or the way that public messaging is coming out? People are changing all the time. Our way of relating to them should be changing all the time too, and becoming more sophisticated and becoming and more relatable.
Right, and being more relatable. In whether it's in a religious or cultural context or in a business context or in a government context, relatable means the message fits the people who need to hear it. And that means we'll have multiple messages in many different, sometimes even contradictory ways, because that's what people need to hear. But we don't tend to allow ourselves to be what others need rather than what we think they need.
It's the difference between intent versus impact.
Yeah.
You yeah. said something. You intended it to be taken a certain way. It wasn't. Okay, let's see how we can think two steps ahead next time. This is what I'm thinking of saying. If I say it, what is the impact going to be? And how is my message going to maximally help the human race to thrive?
Yes, and thinking two steps ahead, that can be a sign of perfectionism, but it can be a sign of really good engagement without the perfectionism.
Mm-hmm.
Many of us learn it through perfectionism, but we have to give up the outcome in order to remain in the relationship.
Yes. We're all a work in progress.
Yep.
And how beautiful that is, because it allows us to accept ourselves just as we are right now.
And to know that we're not yet what we have to become, because those who love us will pull it out of us, or we will engage them in ways that will take us to places we never thought we would go. And that kind of, let's take another break for music, and then I want to come up to the final questions, final question of the show. What should we play now?
So we're going to play Beautiful Life, and, a lot of people tell me that they're inspired by my positivity. And we were talking before about walking through the valley of the shadow of death. I would not have the ability to see silver linings that I have now without my lifelong struggle with with challenges and not being able to see the silver linings for so long. And this came to a head when I had my daughter, Elwyn, and I really had to evaluate how I was going to move forward in my life. Having perfectionism, having academic excellence, as in the Christian faith, we talk about idols. Idols are those things that you put ahead of God. So for me,
they get in the way of seeing reality clearly.
Exactly.
In secular terms.
I didn't see Elwyn as the precious human being she is. I saw the deficiencies. I saw that she would never be able to get into Harvard and Stanford like my husband had done. And I reached a point in my life where I questioned whether I wanted to keep living. And thank God at that moment, I happened to attend a small group that was led by our pastor, Santosh Nainan, at Bethel Grove. And he reminded us that Jesus in his life had been to the lowest depths. He'd been all the way to the cross. And when we're at our lowest depths, all we need to do is hold on to him, because Jesus has been there and he can lift us up. And at that night, I didn't have any hope left. I didn't consider my life to be worth living. And I realized I really had nothing left to lose. And so I asked Jesus to lift me out of that despair. And he did. And as he's done so, I have seen life in a new and much more beautiful light than I ever have before. And it was such a gift to have had that experience. So I hope you all enjoy Beautiful Life.
I was lost, but you found me, hiding in the shadows from my destiny. Fly. for life.
You're listening to WRFI, Watkins Glen, Ithaca, and our guest on this episode is Josie McAllister. So Josie, the way I like to close the show is with a question about self-care. What do you do to take care of yourself physically, emotionally, and intellectually? And when you put all those things together, it adds up to spiritually, I believe, in terms of the way they come together. Throughout the day, daily, weekly, monthly, yearly, so that you can be resilient and ready for the world.
So in that Bible verse that talks about doing all things for God, I realize that that includes all things. So as human beings with a body, we have a limited amount of energy. We can't expect ourselves to keep going and going without rest. So even in taking the time to rest, you know, we're doing that to the glory of God. And I think that when you're young, maybe you don't realize that. And, you know, as we take on more responsibilities, and especially as we start to give advice to those around us on how to live a healthy life, we realize that none of us is exempt from those natural laws. And that's the beauty of life, is just knowing your limitations and knowing, you know, that God created us as finite human beings. So we're able to do what he's given us the strength to do every day, to take care of ourselves and take care of those around us, and to ask him to help us to be present in every moment and to experience his abundance. If there's something that comes up in the medical society that just completely overwhelms and stresses me out, that's a sign to me that I'm not relying on God to help me to overcome that problem. And so, you know, whenever those moments come up, you know, that's just a great reminder to me to pray and ask God for help. And oftentimes he'll supply me with such creative solutions, and I'm able to do so much more than I know I would have been able to do if I just relied on my own strength.
So in the moment of realizing that you are not a grounded spiritual presence, then you step back.
Yes.
And then see what you hadn't seen when you were too invested in what was going on.
Yes, it prevents all those little stressful moments from piling up by the end of the day or getting out of control. It helps your body for you to be aware of it in every moment as well. If you're tensing up, if your jaw is tightening, if your neck is hurting, that's a prompt right there that something's not right. You got to go back. What is going on? What am I thinking about in the back of my mind that I'm not aware of? What am I not giving up to God in this moment?
And do you have a physical regimen, a physical exercise regimen, or a sleep regimen, or eating patterns, or do you just kind of pay attention and adapt as the day unfolds? I mean, as a parent of not really young children now, but you know, life is oftentimes just learning to respond better, to sleep when you can, and to rather than to try. So how is it that you manage these things?
Yes, that rest is so, so crucial, especially since I'm an early bird. So no matter when I go to sleep, I'm going to be up by 6, 7 in the morning. And the girls absolutely are going to be up by 6 or 7 in the morning. It's really helped during this time of pandemic, as we're wearing our masks all day at work. It is so, so physically exhausting. So not only do you have this mask to breathe through, which studies have shown doesn't cut down on your oxygen concentration, but you do have to remember to keep breathing, right? So when you have a mask over your face, sometimes it's a normal physiologic reaction to start hyperventilating, right, to start not taking deep breaths. And so that I've found, you know, to be a really great exercise, just remembering to breathe throughout the entire day. And then because of that exhaustion, I've been going to sleep earlier, and that's been so good for me. So paradoxically, there have been parts of the pandemic that have been really good for restoring my overall health and balance. I no longer go into the office on weekends because, you know, I don't necessarily want to go through our whole entry protocol, sterilizing everything, you know, just to go into the office for a few hours. And then, you know, coming back and reversing that whole process. And so I found that it's been just really the right balance for me to take the weekends off and to take those days that are supposed to be days of rest and just spend them with my family, maybe take a nap in the afternoon. And not be ashamed of setting aside that time that our bodies need to rest.
Neat. Josie, it's been wonderful getting to know you.
Thank you so much, Eric.
So what would you like to close the show with?
So a song that always puts a smile on my face is actually from the Disney cartoon Hercules, because of course with young kids, I've become much more familiar with Disney animation. And Hercules, this song, Go the Distance, kind of encapsulates a lot that we strive for in our lives, to find that place where we fully belong and are accepted and loved. And also to reach a point in our life where we are happy with where we've been and what we've accomplished. And for me as a Christian, someday I look forward to being in heaven with God and seeing him and meeting him. And just hearing him say, well done, good and faithful servant.
And amen. Thank you, Josie.
Thanks, Eric.
While I would go